I'd just like to welcome you this morning. Today we move into the third chapter of the book of Joshua, having been following along now for the first two. And last time we looked at Rahab, but today we move off the subject of Rahab and we begin to look at the period just prior to the children of Israel, or the sons of Israel, having to cross over the Jordan River. And so what we're going to be looking at today is this idea of the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was something that was held most holy in the Jewish church. It sat at the very center of their worship. And so when they constructed their tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant sat within the Holy of Holies. And within the Ark was the Ten Commandments. And so what this shows is that the Lord as the Word is at the very center of all worship and spiritual life. And so it is that the children of Israel, they were asked, or commanded rather, to follow the Ark. When they saw the priests and the Levites bearing it up, they were to follow. And today this occurs and they move to the River Jordan. And there they camp for 3 days in preparation for that crossing. So we're going to be just looking at that period just prior to the crossing this morning. So our reading from the book of Joshua this morning is Joshua chapter 3, verses 1 to 5. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from the acacia grove and came to the Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before crossing over. So it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, "When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests and the Levites bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before." And Joshua said to the people, "Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you." And our reading this morning from the Heavenly Doctrines is from the work The Apocalypse Explained, paragraph number 701. The Ark of the Covenant is called the Ark of the Covenant because it contained the law. And the law, which in a broad sense means the Word, signifies the Lord as to the divine truth, which is the Word. Thus, the divine truth, or Word, which is from the Lord, and in which the Lord is, because all divine truth proceeds from Him. When this is received by man, conjunction with the Lord takes place, and it is this conjunction that is signified by covenant. Man, from freedom, can think and will what is evil, and also think and will what is good. So far, therefore, as a man from that freedom which belongs to his love and thus to his life thinks falsities and wills evils which are contrary to the truths and goods of the Word, so far he is not conjoined to the Lord. But so far as he thinks truths and wills goods which are from the Word, so far he is conjoined to the Lord. And the Lord causes those truths and goods to be of His love, and thus of His life. For these things it is evident that this conjunction is reciprocal, namely, of the Lord with man, and of man with the Lord, such as the conjunction meant in the Word by covenant. So we now reach this point where the sons of Israel begin their advance towards their entry into the promised land. The promised land, of course, being the heavenly life. Promised land is love to the Lord and love to our neighbor. And so this whole process is one of having what prevents those loves being more fully expressed in our lives removed, evils and falsities, so that what is of love might be more established at a more external level of our life. And this movement from where the Israelites are, which is a place called Shittim, to the Jordan begins, we hear, with Joshua rising early in the morning. And Joshua is the word understood in its application to our life. And so we see here that there is a new day beginning. This new beginning is a new state of life. And so this movement out of Shittim, as the ground from which the advance towards the promised land is made, is one that every person has to make to embark on the journey of their spiritual growth and development. So we have seen that this place called Shittim represents a state of acknowledgement of the truth that the Lord alone is righteousness and therefore deserving of merit. What this means is that a person comes into a state of conviction that the truths of the Word are the only thing that has power to fight for us against the hellish influences that keep us centered around our own ego. Gives us an attitude and outlook that looks out just for self. And by laying aside what we think is a claim for merit or credit, and acknowledging that the Lord alone is able to receive merit because of the work that He has done. So this is what moves us from Shittim to the Jordan and onward into the promised land. And this acknowledgement that the Lord alone has power, that the truths of the Word alone can save us, must be one of the heart or the life. A recognition from the heart or life is different from a merely intellectual acknowledgement because it comes with a sense of conviction that compels us to act on the truths that we have. Now, claiming merit for ourselves arises when it is merely an intellectual relationship that we have to spiritual teachings without a sense of their implications for our life personally. Strictly speaking, it dominates when we are more concerned about how we appear externally to others and when we don't really give a lot of attention to the internal things of the Word and their application to the life of our mind, to the life of our thoughts and affections. Where we need to take the Word and use its truths as means to have a look at our beliefs and desires, our ambitions, our values, our attitudes. All these things need to be brought under the authority of the Lord's Word, seen in the light of the loves of heaven, so that they might be purified and able to advance the kingdom of heaven even to the level of external life. Claiming that we possess some form of goodness or rightness or righteousness is always accompanied with attitudes of self-righteousness and self-conceit. And in this lurks a pride in one's own intelligence, the idea that we know best. This being the case, we should be able to see that any sense of goodness that we hold in regard to ourselves is something that flows out of the hells, and as such is a form of denial that the Lord alone is righteousness and worthy of merit. We don't actually have to look that hard to see when we are caught up in states that deny the Lord, or what is the same thing, that don't accept what the truths of the Word teach in this area. Self-merit manifests in a lot of different ways. It can be seen in a sense of our own righteousness, which is really an attitude or need to always be right. It can be seen in defensive behaviors and the need to constantly justify one's position. This defensiveness can either be passive or active, going silent when offended or turning to attack when it feels threatened. So if we find ourselves constantly battling to get our own way, or we respond with attitudes that are dismissive of the views of others, then maybe we need to look into what's governing our responses to life. Shittim, where the Israelites start off in our story, represents a putting aside of such attitudes, or at least a willingness to acknowledge and work with the Lord to have these attitudes changed or removed. Such attitudes are embodied and so well pictured in the Pharisees of the New Testament, who stood against the Lord at every turn, and so represents those aspects of our proprium that continually object to the demands truth makes on our life, and so takes a stand against the divine truth in favor of what is evil and false, from which comes a false self-image that is absorbed in the loves of self and the world. But once the Word is acknowledged as being righteousness itself, then a new state of understanding represented by Joshua arises, and a new state of life then begins to come to the fore. This new state is called the morning. And with the morning and the rising of Joshua, so too the sons of Israel, or the truths of the Word that have gathered and camped in our memory, these begin to be reorganized, bringing us to the Jordan River and so to the boundary of Canaan, or to the possibility of a new life grounded in the loves of heaven. So in our story today, the Jordan River stands as a boundary that actually prevents the children of Israel from advancing into the land of promise. At this point, there is nothing to do but stop and wait. And so we read that the sons of Israel lodged there before they passed over. Now verse 2 states that they lodged there for 3 days. And then after 3 days, we are told that the officers went through the host. And in verse 3, that they commanded the people, saying, "When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests and the Levites bearing the ark, then you shall be removed from your place and go after it." Now, as an obstacle, the Jordan River represents what prevents the things of the Lord and of the church advancing in our life. It is a barrier. It's something stopping the movement of the children of Israel. When we truly acknowledge that the Word or Lord alone is goodness and truth, we are also in a state of acceptance that we, in and of ourselves, are nothing but what is evil and false. And it is this acknowledgement that opens up our ability to see the things that are an obstacle to the loves of heaven, making their presence more fully felt in our life. And the first stages of this shift are described by the sons of Israel halting at the Jordan River. There it is. The river is before them. They are able to see now what prevents them crossing over. Now this land that stands before them, like we have seen with the city of Jericho, is filled with Canaanites. And Canaanites represent the self-interest of the proprium, or the ego. When you are working with the Word, it is useful to keep in mind that the things within it have a dual application depending on their context. So, as we saw with Jericho last time, so the Jordan too has a dual meaning depending on the context. When it stands opposed to the sons of Israel, preventing them from entering the land, it has a negative meaning in that it represents false perspectives and beliefs we hold that shut out the light and love of heaven from areas of our life. If things are to progress, then the false perspectives and beliefs we carried that we carry that are opposed to the loves and life of heaven have to be removed. And the reason they have to be removed is because the Lord can't be in false perspectives and ideas. He is present in His truths. These are the things that we need to think and see from in order to live a spiritual life. So the sons of Israel represent the knowledge we have of the Word, knowledge of its stories and of its prophecy, so that those who are called here officers represent higher principles, things that govern and command. That's what these officers are. And these higher principles, they can direct and organize the things found in the literal sense of the word, so that they are able to be used to illustrate more internal realities and so bring us into a fuller sense of the internal or deeper meaning of the word and how these stories can be applied to the inner things of the mind. And so it is that we see that after 3 days, we are told, the officers of the people are said to pass into the midst of the host. And it was from there that they commanded the people. Now the word is given to us by the Lord as divine revelation, so that we can be assisted and supported in our spiritual growth or regeneration. And so the principles we find in the heavenly doctrines are what are represented here by the officers. It is doctrine. Our knowledge of the word is organized in accordance with our understanding of doctrine. Whatever focus we bring to the word determines how we understand it. If our focus is on externals, our attention will be given to how we appear to others, and we will fail to see the contradictions that exist within ourselves. We will see the word as something that supports our point of view, and in those places where it highlights evils and falsities, our attention will be on others, either in history or around us, and not directed towards our inner life. It is when we view the principles of the heavenly doctrines as the basis for examining our life, then the stories of the Word begin to be organized or understood in a way that supports this kind of inner work. We see that the evils and falsities that are mentioned within the Word are actually within us, and that it is here that our attention needs to be directed. This shift in our understanding of the Word is critical to entering into the promised land, or Canaan. This process, or shift, in how we regard the Word must reach its completion before we can move on. And this is represented in our story by reference to 3 days. The 3 days were passed before the officers went through the midst of the host. Internally, by 3 days is not meant 3 days, but the completion of a state of transition. The number 3 in Scripture always represents what is complete, what has been fulfilled, what has run its course. And so the 3 days here signify all the states that have to be passed through in order for our understanding of the Word to be organized so that it can support the inner work of our spiritual transformation or regeneration. The offices being said to pass through the host of the sons of Israel represents our taking hold of the doctrines and using them as a basis for building up our understanding of the Word. What they commanded the people highlights the universal truth that has to be present if we are to undergo the process of being regenerated. That universal truth is the universal truth that the heavenly doctrines teach is that the spiritual life involves a commitment to following the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord our God. Now the Ark was a box made of shittim wood overlaid with gold. It contained the tables upon which were written the Ten Commandments. And these represent the Word. The Ten Commandments are a symbol for the whole of the Word. And so they are the divine laws, the laws that come forth from the divine itself. These laws being presented to human minds that they might be led into those things that pertain to loving the Lord and loving our neighbor. And this term covenant means an agreement that brings two or more parties into a relationship with one another. Thus, covenant spiritually means conjunction or joining together. So we can ask ourselves, what is this covenant? And who or what are the parties involved in this relationship? Now, one of the mistakes that people make when they read the word literally in regard to the Lord making a covenant with his people is they think of people naturally, or as referring to individual human beings, or of a collection of people forming a nation such as the nation of Israel. But people and nations mentioned in the word don't refer to natural people or nations in the world. Rather, they refer to states of good and truth or evil and falsity in the human mind. Now, if we really saw this, then we wouldn't make the error of thinking that the Lord makes his covenant with us as individuals. The fact is, and it's a statement in the heavenly doctrines, that the Lord can never be joined to us, as there is nothing in what we are as finite human beings that is capable of receiving the Lord. So we need to understand this. The Lord does not join himself with us as we are in ourselves. The Lord is only able to unite himself with what is of himself. That is what the Lord joins in a covenant, what is of himself. So when we read of the Lord setting up a covenant with the sons of Israel, we are dealing with something that represents a spiritual reality, not a natural one. And so when we see that the sons of Israel are nothing other than truths of the Word, we can see that the covenant that's established is between the Lord as goodness and the truths of the Word represented by the sons of Israel that are in accord with that goodness, that can give it expression. The Word itself is the covenant. This is given to us by the Lord, and it is from him, and so it is him. The Word is never ours, although the Lord has made it so that it can be as if it is ours. So clearly, we all can see that the word can be taken into our mind, and it can sit there, either as a thing of the memory, or it can penetrate further into the life. But even though it is in us, it is never ours. It is the Lord's presence within our mind. And this is why the word and our understanding of the word is so important. For it is the sole means by which a person is able to have a sense of being in the life of heaven. The more truths that are established and organized into a human form within our mind, the greater the sense of the Lord's presence within that mind. There is a remarkable statement in the Arcana Celestia, which says that the Word is in fact heaven. In the Arcana Celestia number 1878, it says this: the Word is so holy in the heavens that the Word is, so to speak, heaven to those who are there. So a love for the Word has to be cultivated, because it's through that love for the Word, which is love to the Lord, and it is through cultivating it, which is love to the neighbor, using it to tidy up our life so that we can be more effective in our communication with others, that makes heaven within us. This is why we need to be in the Word, learning from it, in the doctrines, learning to understand it so that we can apply it. Because this is the Word, is the very life of heaven. It is the Word that gives us a sense of being connected to the Lord. And if we have worked to have our life built on it, then this sense of connection can never ever leave us, but it makes heaven within us. For when the Word is in our minds, the Lord is there also. And because the Lord is in the Word and the Word is in us, we then are in the Lord. And so we have established within us a sense of connection with the divine. And this is the nature of what is meant by covenant. So to see that ark lifted by the priests and the Levites is to see or understand that the Word contains the whole of heaven. It is the Lord Himself. And heaven is everything to do with love and wisdom. So priests represent the Lord's love going forth to save what is truly human in people, while the Levites that bear the Ark of the Covenant are all the truths that serves the Lord's love for the salvation of the human race. So each day that passes, we are given an opportunity to work with the Word, to be in it, to prepare our minds through studying it, through studying the heavenly doctrines, so that our perceptions can be opened, that we might see how the Ark is born by love to the Lord and love towards our neighbor, which is what the priests and the Levites represent. When we look to the Word to deliver us from evils, we find that those things represented by the priests that carry the ark are active within us. And when we are building up our understanding of spiritual things, so we find that what is represented by the Levites is active within us. The will and the understanding are being drawn together under the authority and power of heaven, because it is becoming centered on the Word and its application to life. And so this is what is represented by those priests and those Levites carrying the ark. And for us to see this is to understand spiritual principles and their operation within our life. That is what moves us in the spiritual life. That's what moves us from Shittim to the borders of Canaan, to that Jordan River. Our response must ever be to follow the precepts of the Word as best we can. If we do this, then the Ark of the Covenant goes before us. It initiates our shifts in state. And as we see, it brings us to the Jordan River to view those things, those evils and falsities in our life that flow from our proprium or ego that prevents the life of heaven being a fuller reality for each of us. And it is by coming to this place, by coming to the Jordan, that we shall see that it is the Lord alone who is able to deliver us. So just in closing, a reading from the Apocalypse Explained, number 700. Now as the Lord alone removes and scatters the falsities of evil that are from hell, and by His divine truths introduces the faithful into the church and into heaven, and as the ark and the law enclosed in it represent the Lord in relation to divine truth, it was commanded that the ark should go before the people and lead them. Amen.